Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
It would be a Wolves fan, eh?
On goes Paul. People might yet win it here for Wolves. Blasting the shot. What a goal!
This is an advertisement from BetterHelp Therapy Online. We all carry different stresses, big and small. It could be from work, stuff going on at home, or just from supporting a football team you flatter to deceive, and as the bedsheets have always said, let us down. We often bottle up these stresses and try and keep a lid on them, but when you do that, it can start to affect you negatively. That's where therapy comes in. It gives you a place to get these things off your chest, get down to root cause, and figure out how to work through what's weighing you down. Therapy is there to help develop positive coping skills. It's not just for people who have experienced major trauma. It's about empowering you to be the best version of yourself. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, why not look and give BetterHelp a try? It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible and suited to your schedule. With over 1,000 therapists in the UK already, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Our listeners can get 10% off their first month using the code betterhelp.com/wanderers. That's betterhelp.com/wanderers. Let's get back to the show.
Good evening, good morning, hello everyone. Stu here for the Fancast in association with Audi and the Boston Coffee Company. With me tonight is Jiffo and Pricey on this glorious Friday night for your entertainment. One comment straight away. I mean, this is highly popular stuff here. PTMM54, hi all in the chat. Welcome. It's going to be one of them. Yes, we can see you and you can see us. I mean, it was a bit disappointing, wasn't it? Let's not beat around the bush. I mean, I was so annoyed. I didn't speak to anyone, and I went to bed as soon as I got in. That was all I could do.
Didn't say anything on the car ride home.
No, didn't talk to them. Didn't talk to my mum. Matt had already asked me if I wanted to go into town and get the bus back with him. But I said before the game, I said no. Nope. Even if it's a 4-0 win, I'm going home with a lift. I've got to get up early. This is my plan. And so I didn't want to speak to my mom or my sister, who I was getting the right lift with. Got in the house, straight to bed, just the way it was. Jiffo, have you got over it yet, or are you still feeling the pain? Is this going to be Friday night therapy for you?
Probably, I think. I mean, it's just disappointing. I mean, just from all the highs that we've had over the last few weeks, just to come down and just to drop down to the lows of yesterday, it feels like a massive kick in the nads. It's frustrating. It really is.
I mean, Pricey, I mentioned it, and then you put it as well. The phrase that epitomised that first half.
What did I say? I forgot.
The after the Lord's Mayor show thing.
Oh, yes. Yeah, it was. I mean, we all went into this game with probably a bit of inflated optimism. And why not? Why wouldn't you? I mean, we go into this game, we were what? Was it 7 or was it 8 unbeaten? And, you know, it probably even longer, you know, at home. We haven't been beaten at home for quite a while. Obviously, we're all still jubilant and on cloud 9 after Sunday. And, you know, we... And when I say we, I mean like the Royal We fans and players probably took that into the game. But ultimately we ended up getting the big fat kick in the dick because that's how I felt coming out of it, like literally like sore bollocks, because how the game went, obviously we'll get into it, but it had I could say highs and lows, but we'd have to flip that round because it was all low first, wasn't it? And then we got to some of the highs in the second half. It's ultimately a bit of a slap in the face of a bit of reality. I'm not saying reality, but like I say, it's just a bit of a slap in the face. We've had an enjoyable time of late, League and Cup. And, it looked like we were still going to keep the unbeaten run intact, but unfortunately, some young little upstart had other ideas.
Yeah, and I think it's a good point here in the chat from Martin Wolfright. Very flat atmosphere last night. I think we just took it for granted that we'd win. I think that's spot on. I think that didn't seem just from the fans, did it, Jafar? I think the team kind of expected to just turn up and walk over Man United because they are a bit of a joke at the minute. Like I put in the chat the other day. They turned into the Spice Boys of Liverpool in the 90s, and the whole are being pegged back by Newport and all this. And yeah, we've got the high of, like Pricey said, the high of the weekend in the last few weeks. Was it a bit of complacency?
I think you're not wrong in saying that. I mean, it's weird when you're playing a club the size of Man United and they've come into a game with something to prove, and their top player came into the game with something to prove in Rashford. And it's not that often. You don't get that around the world. And in the Premier League, you certainly shouldn't normally get that. And as like you say, complacency did kick in. And I think, were they riding a crest of a wave from Sunday? Probably still, yes, a little bit. But there was enough distractions around the game as well. We're trying to bring players in, trying to do that as well. And maybe the focus was lost. But now that could only sharpen their minds going into the weekend, because at the end of the day, they're still in this sort of like gap now where they can push up in the league, and they've got to want to push themselves as a whole squad to carry on forward, because they can't let it drop now, to use a cliche sort of thing. And they've got to want to do it. And it's frustrating that we saw this drop off when we're kind of at a point where we needed to kick on again. And have that extra kick on against the team that we probably should have had got a point against last night before the game.
I think what didn't help the atmosphere is just the nature of the early goal. I think we barely had much time to get anything going, and then it will knock the momentum out of the fans when a goal goes in that early. Like I say, we've come into it on the crest of a wave, and I don't think that would have helped, to be honest, with the fans letting one in so early.
Yeah, and having a light show to Wonder of You probably didn't help either, which was a really strange, bizarre choice of thing to happen. But before the kick in the bollocks from Rashford. Which you don't know what he was paying for in Ireland. He could have been doing that as well. He might be a bit of a kink. Who knows? But the lineup, I mean, Gully was very open on Twitter and in correspondence with us about how he wanted Aitnuri back from the start. And there was the whole thing of Joe Gomez being back. Shoot me. Was it the right call? Because I know Andy was saying on the previous show before the game, when was that, Wednesday? Wednesday night, that you don't change a winning side. In this case, when you've got two players who were in better form before they were taken out, was it the right choice? Without hindsight, did you think it at the time?
To be fair, yeah. I would say no. Because I just think, and I said on the previous show, that I think we needed to be more combative against Man United than we were against West Brom. Because at the end of the day, you've got who used to be probably one of the best defensive midfielders in the world in Casemiro in that midfield. You've got a young upstart in there. You're getting them around them and you put pressure on them, and you have somebody like Joe Gomez who can take the game and step forward and carry us 10, 15 yards further up the pitch. Why not? Because I think looking at it, and my fear was that we would play on the edge of our own box with Doyle. which is fine against certain teams, but when it comes to like Man United, you don't want them running at you because they've got so much pace in Garnacho and Rashford that they can really punish you. Really punish you with pace. And that's what they did. And any time that we did step up too far, we left all the space in behind because we can't get back in.
Yeah. And I think was that the thing on the left hand side, Price? Because we saw him when he came on out Nuri. It was a different game. Well, obviously circumstances of the goal, the scoreline at the time as well, but there was just balance again. But at the same time, Doherty been playing well, so it would have been harsh.
Yeah, I can see both sides of the argument, really. It's the old cliche or the old adage, isn't it? You don't change a winning team or one that's not losing. Yeah, we can all be captain hindsights now, but I think if you asked the majority of Wolves fans, they would say our best team contains Ait Nouri at left back, left wing back rather than Doc. I think we can probably all, like I say, well, the majority of us would probably go along with that. But the Doyle and Gomez debate, I'm sure we've mentioned it on a previous pod, you know, that the horses for courses approach is probably best with those two at the moment. You can't definitively pick one or the other and say we will 100% go with them until circumstances change. You have that with Lamina. Lamina will always start, and rightly so. But, you know, depending on who the opposition, who the coaching team think will be the best fit, it will be Gomez or it will be Doyle. But that being said, you know, Doyle's been flavour of the month recently. He has played really well. So I don't really think any one of us can have any real issues or complaints with the team that started. I'll admit, I half expected, well, I maybe thought if any of them was going to change, I thought that, you know, Ait Nouri might come in. But the real one I thought would be that Sarabia coming back in, mainly because I think I mentioned it on the post Albion pod that I've not been that impressed with Bellegarde, to be honest, in recent times. Yeah, he had his electric start and then it's completely fallen off the radar. Whether or not that's because his position seems to change quite frequently since we played him, I don't think he's got a definitive position nailed down. And, you know, depending on some of these lineup charts that you see on whatever app you use, some apps have him up front, you know, which I'm not sure is particularly true. But, you know, I think that I had no issues with the lineup. To be honest, I think that might change now, going to the Chelsea game. But I thought that those three spots that were probably up for grabs: Bellegarde's, Docks, and Doyle's. But you know, I had no complaints.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, that's where I thought I was on a par with Vandy as well. I didn't want it changed. I mean, like, before anyone mentions it, and I know some people will. Yes, I am 40 years old, and I did cut my face shaving. Through just the sheer anger and frustration at this game, so that's just to set the way for the video washers. And
Gillette is not the best that Stu can get.
No, you know what? You know the first tangent 11 minutes in. I tried the one that Mr. Sterling was promoting, the green one. I can't remember what it's called.
Oh yeah,
wank. Just shit. Doesn't do anything. You might as well just get one of them. The pack of five Bics that you get. Well, like when you're really a low ebb and you forgot something.
Doesn't do anything, just like Sterling.
Yeah, exactly. it's flash. It looks good, but ultimately it's a waste of time. Exactly like Sterling. So I went back to my ProGlide power, and there was a bit too much power in my hand. Oh dear.
No. I've heard that before.
Yeah, I wish there had been that much excitement. But there we are. But from a Man United point of view, there was excitement, and as we covered, I thought it was just written in the stars, wasn't it? It happened last time when Rashford was taken out the team for being a naughty boy, and he came back and punished us, and then yet again, brilliant finish, Warwick of home.
Yeah, the thing is with Rashford, when he's on his game, he's probably one of the best players in the Premier League, so. The last thing you want is him in a mood where he wants to punish a team, wants to prove a point, and he runs at you. Because the guy has got an incredible turn of pace. He's electric with the football at his feet. And then, as you say, it's a fantastic finish. You can't complain about it in terms of the way that he scored the goal. But I think people are trying to overanalyze that the goal and what he should have done, what Kilman should have done. The thing is, it all happens so quickly, and it's in a couple of seconds that they can't really think and change to what they want to do. And that's the problem with playing against somebody like Rashford, is because he forces you to make instant decisions. And if the instant decision ain't right at the time, you messed it up. You conceded a goal.
Yeah. You just got to hold your hands up on you and just, yeah, great goal. What wasn't a great goal was the second. And again, like you said about rash decisions, that whole right-hand side, why was Semedo, what was Neto doing? Why was Semedo being left on his own all throughout the entire first half, it seemed? Covering like two or three men on his own. Just bizarre behaviour, but ridiculous look, Man United look, pricey, because until I watched it this afternoon, I had no idea how that ball even went in.
No. Nah, neither would I. I mean, the first half wasn't great for us, and Rashford was, like, at some points, scaring the shit out of us. That area of the pitch, we were totally exposed. Whether that's, you know, like say, Neto wasn't pulling his weight at the time, which I think I did watch the highlights back again, you know, earlier today, and for that goal, it's just. It's acres of space. And like you say, I've got no idea how that ball went in. I mean, from my position where I sit in the raucous family enclosure section of the ground, I had no idea. I just assumed it was an own goal. It's only when you watch it back. Well, like you say, I'm still not even sure how it's his goal because... Is the ball that defies the laws of physics, how it went in the direction that it went. But you do just see him underneath Dawson just celebrating away in, like, in a Dawson sandwich. And you just think, okay, fair enough. But he wouldn't do that again if you played the same ball across now with Dawson right on him. There's no way that ball goes in. It's just, like you say, it's just one of those things, sheer luck. How it went in. It's not sheer luck in the build up to it, of course. You know, we've kind of, you know, left ourselves exposed in that regard. But, you know, how the finish went in, sheer luck. But, you know, them's the breaks. You know, Hoyland's been pretty dog shit since he's been at United. And I think he's now starting to get a few performances and a few goals under his belt. So, as is the way, if you need a goal, come to Molineux. gift wrap on for you.
I mean, you have a deflection off your captain that then goes through the keeper's legs, which then miraculously falls exactly right into your path. And of course, that's going to happen here. Home of fun. Home of gifts.
Yeah.
But 2-0. I mean, I've never been more happy in my life to go in 2-0 at halftime because I've only seen one of the offside ones, the one that Wolves highlights had, which... But the other one, both looked very close to me. I don't know. I hadn't seen it on TNT, but they looked close. And 4-0 wouldn't have flattered them, would it, Jeffo? I think we were so bad and they were actually not awful for a change.
Yeah, they were on it. They worked together. They looked like they had a plan for the first time this season. Man United did. It's strange to see a Ten Hag side look so organised, because since he's been there, that hasn't been the case. And to be fair, Casemiro, both finishes very, very good. Very, very good. And so we're lucky that we've got VAR in this case to solidify. I know the ref put the line-up, put his flag up for both, but that's only probably down to protocol. Well, you know, as a defensive line-up, it just didn't seem... We didn't seem to be set up properly.
No.
To give a guy who can head the ball as well as he can in Casemiro, two goals essentially, it's pathetic, and it's the thing is, a lot of this game was about preventable errors. Everything that we did wrong, we caused ourselves. And, you know, scooting back around to that second goal again, you got to look at Matias Cunha. You got to look at Neto, where they're giving the ball away in silly areas. And they're trying to overplay. And then, like, with the second goal, Cunha loses the ball trying to make a silly pass. Neto doesn't want to track back because they just don't want to do it. They don't want to put the work in. And it's frustrating. It's frustrating when you've got weeks and weeks of really good, solid defensive work and a good foundation to work from, to looking like you didn't have any cohesion and any strength at the back. And I don't know whether that was because with the set pieces that they got the organisation wrong, and they did a mixture of zonal and man mark, you know, potentially. But nobody seemed to pick up Casemiro. And say 4-0 really wouldn't have flattered them going into the half. It really wouldn't have done, because they were in total control of that game. And we looked like deer in the headlights.
Yeah. And well, yeah, you've touched on it there, but so I was going to bring it up later, but why not? We're freestyle here. Neto and his attitude, the body language, the throwing the arms up. It's something that's kind of been there, not his whole time here, and you're obviously going to get the fiery Portugueseness of it. I mean, his countrymen who've been here over the last 4 or 5 years have all had similar kind of things, but it just didn't sit right with me. And I know Liam Keane mentioned it on the Wolves poddy as well, that he looked to the bench quite a lot and like blaming other people. And it's almost like, and he was doing it a bit at the first half at Albion as well until he scored. And it's like, I don't know where this has come from, because then we all know he's probably going to be off in the summer. So I don't know. Did you see anything of this process? Because other than him throwing his arms around, I didn't see anything that bad until today. And then everything's been, there's quite a few bits of discourse on it.
Yeah. So I hadn't picked up on anything on it initially. When Tom mentioned it in the chat, I then started to pay attention. And whether it's because it had been mentioned, so I was looking for it, that I noticed it. But you do notice that there's some mannerisms that when he was, you know, telling other people, like telling Doyle to, you know, hurry up and take a corner, or like you say, he's making flat arm movements to the bench, or just the general lack of urgency off the ball. You know, I did notice a few things. Whether or not, you know, I'm magnifying a small issue here or something that's already been there for a long time that we've just lived with, because when he gets the ball, he's one of our best players. It's probably not something I'm concerned about, to be honest. And like you say, if we're concerned about him because he thinks he wants to leave, well, we know he wants to leave. we know that come this summer, he'll be the first one out the door. And we'll take the money, you know, thank you very much, and we'll rebuild. We all know that teams like Arsenal, City, from what I've read, you know, they're all keeping a watch on him, they're all sniffing around him, so he's going to go. But I don't think it's anything too unjust to be concerned about. He's probably, you know, he probably just wants to see more of the ball. Like I say, in that game, certainly in the first half, as Defoe said, we were just getting completely overrun from all sides. It was a far cry from the how solid we've looked in recent weeks. You know, we've kind of prided ourselves recently on, you know, not letting in too many goals. But you know, on the flip side, we've actually, you know, going through quite a sweet scoring run at the moment. You know, we're going quite a few, I can't remember how many games in a row. I'm sure I heard yesterday something like 18 home games in a row where we've scored. Something around that mark. So we were just caught by this, you know, it's an unfamiliar sight in recent times anyway, this Man United train hurtling towards us, because yeah, you know, probably people from our vintage, you know, remember United being like that back in the day, you know, in our era team that we remember, or, you know, post Ferguson, it's not been like that for United. They've been generally a drab team to watch, haven't they? They've been awful through the Van Gaal years, the Mourinho years, and certainly the Ranić years, you know, they've been horrible to watch. Yesterday, I was like, well, certainly the first half, should I say, it was that first bit where, you know, you could see, oh, this is what, you know, this is kind of what they used to be like. Whether we were party to that by letting them run all over us the first bit anyway. But, yeah, I mean, for the Neto stuff, I mean, I did notice some things, but maybe it's another thing for us to keep a close eye on in Sunday's game to see if it's replicated, because, you know, now it's been brought up and there was probably one to watch. But like I say, long term, it's nothing to be concerned about. He's fed up. He wants to go, because, like I say, we know he's going to be off anyway.
Yeah. I mean, you're talking about that United and the Fergie years. My dad texted me before the game saying my dad's a United fan for his sins. And he said that this is the strongest side we've put out all season. Beware. And you could see them warming up. I mean, they weren't intimidated by Wonder of You in the tunnel, was they? And they did look, they looked better. They looked composed. And like Jafel said, a Ten Hag side who looked disciplined and tactically aware, which was weird. And we looked anything but. And was that from Neto? Who knows?
You wouldn't see Galatasaray saying welcome to hell and play Wonder of You, would you?
I mean, you could even play Highway to Hell. That'd be better. But while we're on it, Neto, I mean, we got in at halftime, amazingly, only 2-0. And then, as has been the way a couple of times this season, I mean, I don't think anyone spoke to each other. And we mentioned earlier that I didn't speak to anyone afterwards. But at halftime, it was like the easiest route through to the toilet ever, because like no one spoke. It was like pure shock that like what had just happened. And that wasn't the fact that I don't eat these things anymore, because they priced me out of pies. But yesterday, they've now put the Balti pies, the Black Country Balti pies, in the Steve Ball stand up to £6. £6 for a pie. And one of the...
Will it taste like? Is that absolutely good?
I refuse.
I refuse.
You know what? I worked it out. I've had a pie before this season. I've had a pie every home game. I mean, you can quite tell looking at me. I've had a pie every home game since I was about 16. So you worked that out last season for the price it was. It was probably about 108 quid. So it's like 1/7 of a season ticket on pastries, which is just not good for anyone. So for my health and them, see. If they bought a striker, I mean, we'll get onto this later. If they bought a striker and the money was going somewhere, then maybe I could justify it. But since we're not spending anymore, fuck you all. Right. So,
you know, I might upset some people here, but you know, when I used to have, back in the day, when I used to have the Balti pies, I used to like put a layer of ketchup on top of it before I ate.
I know.
I don't know if people think that's outrageous or not, but. I like to add a bit of taste to the tasteless Balti pies. I'm on you.
I saw people doing that before, but I've seen people putting like ketchup on like steak pies as well. It's just what would you do?
It's not sure about
that. You know, each to your own. You pay your money, take your choice. But second half, you come out and then we have the moment, which I can't believe. went so well with no one saying a single thing about. But that is a dive. I don't care what anyone says. That is a dive from Pedro Neto. Obviously, it doesn't matter because we've been on the receiving end, especially against Newcastle. But it was pretty pathetic, wasn't it, Jafo? I mean, come on. I know it's at speed, and yes, it's any kind of touch. But we were told after that Newcastle pass by the Michael Owen and Howard Webb show that yeah, they got that one wrong.
Yeah.
They're giving that.
Simulation is exactly what it was. I mean, the one thing that I've always asked from referees is consistency. And at least they're consistently shit. And they didn't overturn it, because that would have just sent Molyneux into absolute fucking raucous, pandemonious frigging anger and hellfire if they'd have overturned that, because everything that we've had this season in terms of penalty decisions not being overturned. you know, it would be sanctimonious bullshit on the PGMOL's side to change it. But as you say, it's a dive. Pedro Neto has a reputation for doing that, so it doesn't really surprise me. I wish he wouldn't do it because I don't think he should be part of the game at any level. I hate it when our players do it. I hate it when opposition players do it. I want people to try and score goals in a proper way, but that's just me being a purist and wanting to see the world in a beautiful way. But people like that exist in football, and it's frustrating. It's very frustrating, especially when you see your own players doing it.
Yeah, I think we've had this against us so many times this season that I kind of think, fuck it, let's play it their game. Play it. If this is what it takes to get a penalty. You know, do you remember when, who was it that headbutted Kilman and he was it Vinicius? Oh,
yeah.
And, you know, he did the right thing. You know, he did what we would all consider to be the right thing. He didn't throw himself to the floor and therefore he stayed on, Vinicius stayed on the pitch. And you're thinking, well, you know full well, like if you flip that round, if one of our lot puts the head up to someone's face, that whoever it is will just throw themselves to the ground and we'll be down a man. And who comes off the worst that situation will we do? So I'm almost at the point now where I don't like it when air players throw themselves to the ground like that. But this is where, unfortunately, this is where we are. As Jaffo said, I'd love to be in a world where this doesn't apply or this doesn't happen. But it's unfortunately where we are. And I was listening to the Ramble this morning and they said, like, obviously it gets a kick on the shin, but obviously it's in no way, it warrants the dive on the floor. And I think VAR did go on for a little bit, didn't it, when they were checking it. And I did wonder as time was going on whether or not this was going to be overturned. I'd be thinking, well, it'd be the old woe is me, Wolves, luck again, coming on to for like something to get overturned that never happens to us. So I was pleasantly surprised that it stood. But I don't know. Like I say, this is where we are with football now, isn't it? This is what you get. You get penalties for these sorts of things, rightly or wrongly. So
yeah,
I think in the eyes of the sane, in the eyes of the ones with the common sense, it's not a penalty. But in where we are with football, yes, and gladly received.
I mean, while we're in referee VAR court now, let's. I mean, I didn't see this
again.
I didn't see the Anana thing until after the game when people were saying, oh, how they done it again. There was a thing from Paddy Power as well. I mean, it doesn't matter that the ball's gone, does it? If the ball's in play and he's, again, tried to decapitate someone and got away with it again.
Yeah. I mean, if he doesn't get a sponsorship deal from Specsavers at the end of the season, Anana, they're really missing the trick because the guy must be fucking blind. he just not going to. It's same at Old Trafford. He didn't get anywhere near the ball. Like he's the biggest clown of a goalkeeper when it comes to climbing crosses out there. It is pathetic, and the fact that they don't even look at it and they don't even question it in the right way, because that brings it back to consistency again. Because they've given penalties for that this season for other clubs, and then some they've said no. And then it comes down to the bullshit when it comes to opinions, and a VAR shouldn't be about opinions, and it should be scientific, it should be binary in its way of looking at things, because at the end of the day it's a penalty or it's not. There's no in between. There's not a scale of these things. So it's just frustrating that it's happened not only once but fucking twice now. Twice, and he's literally Superman punched him in the side of the head with a mixed in with a clothesline. It's the sort of bullshit that you'd see in WWE. It's frustrating. It really is.
It's something the Ultimate Warrior would used to do, wouldn't it, back in the day? Just jump at them with a lariat or something. I mean, I missed it at the time. I didn't clock it because I was obviously my eyes were drawn to the fact that it was cleared off the line, wasn't it, the ball? And I don't think, correct me if I'm wrong here, guys, but I don't think many of the players appealed. I think I might have saw one player appeal. But again, maybe we were just distracted by the fact that we almost scored. But again, this is where something like VAR should come in, with the clear and obvious error. Can it be a clear and obvious error if the referee's completely missed it? Missed like someone being borderline decapitated again by the same guy. Maybe that should be picked up, but yeah, you know, it's just funny, isn't it? Like 6 months apart, this clown of a keeper that United have signed is just an utter shambles. And to think they're like, they let De Gea go and spent good money. Well, you know, United don't have good money. United spent money at this guy who, I don't know, just tends to cost them points or knock them out of Champions Leagues more than anything else.
Yeah, talking about keepers having a mare. Obviously, I love Jose Sarr, but calls in the group. Oh, we'll get back to the game in a minute. Calls in the group for him to be replaced, to be sold. He had one of his nights, didn't he? I don't know what that little dribble drag back nonsense that he was trying on the edge of the box. It's just the way he is, isn't it? I mean, he's a maverick. He's a showman. Probably don't want that in a goalkeeper. But it's his first one in months. So what do you do? He's more than likely not going to do it again now for a bit. But you just got to take it, haven't you, surely?
I think so. I mean, we all know what he's about by now. So there's no point even wasting time on an argument saying, do we put Bentley in or exactly. Tom King in? So that's just a complete non-starter for right now, because we know that that's just, you know, cutting one leg off at the knee. Pointless. But, you know, talking about whether we sell him or not, I mean, I suppose you'd have to ask how many points over the time since he's been here, how many points has Sarr cost us, you know, because that's something you have to look at when the people making the argument saying we've got to get rid of him. You know, how many points has he generally cost us during his time here, or, you know, this season, for example? It's with Wolves, he's not going to be the perfect keeper, and he's not going to be like a robot that, you know, never makes a mistake whatsoever. But like you say, he had a bit of a moment. He didn't cost us anything. I know there was another one, was it second half, when he got a dodgy pass back, didn't he? And it rebounded off. I can't remember who the United player rebounded off now, but that nearly went in. I think that was during the first half horror show, wasn't it? And so I know, like, he's, you know, he just has have his moments. But I mean, talk of replacing with one of our two backups is just completely farcical conversation to have. You know, is it a priority position for the summer? Probably not. So, you know, I mean, if he cocks up, we'll call him out on it and say it like it is. But, you know, I think there's probably bigger problems at the moment.
Yeah. I mean, there's been comments about Totti, and I mean, the marking for their third goal, whoever was supposed to be on him for that. I mean, he's literally just stood there and it's hitting him on the head. He didn't even have to move. And going from being pretty solid, I mean, was there a stat, Jafo, about something about how we don't concede from corners at all or something mental like that? I'm sure I made that up.
No, I think we got into January and we hadn't conceded from a set piece, or we'd only conceded one. That's what Gary had put in. O'Neill had come in and done this solidification sort of process of how Allardyce used to do things back in the day. Managers like that, they come in, they work from the back. You have a nice build from your defence, solid defence, because if you get clean sheets, you're guaranteed a point in a game. And then if you score a goal and you're getting clean sheets 90% of the time, you're going to win. And that's it's a boring way of playing football on paper, but it makes sense. And to see us give, like I say, so many goals away and so many chances away from free kicks and corners was mind-blowing, really, because it's just not what we've done this season.
No. I mean, it did seem like the Lord Mayor Show comments again, that it was just they use so much energy by not using energy at the weekend that everyone was knackered, but they shouldn't have been. And people were doing really bizarre things throughout the whole game. But yet we were still in it. And then you get the second goal. And I mean, I didn't jump up or do anything at all until the third, but the second one goes in, and you do kind of think, oh, well, we've got a chance again here because of how fragile Man United are.
I did find it funny. I think, was it around this time? I don't want to be part of this pylon, to be honest, but I just had a little giggle when I saw Maguire was warming up to come on. his top would come off and he was coming on. So I thought, oh, jokingly, I said we might have a chance. But I was the same as you, Stu, to be honest. When Kilman did score, it wasn't like an elated celebration because I just thought, well, this would be like the valiant effort towards the end to try and bring something back. But I was assuming because United then started throwing the defenders on that they were going to just sit back and shore it up. As it was, they brought on two defenders and then carried on trying to attack us relentlessly. But the thing with this team is that we kind of never know when we're beat, do we really? So like bringing it back to 3-2 with only 5 minutes of normal time left, it does kind of, whilst I wasn't like elated, excited at the time, I did then, really like get a sense of optimism from all the crowds to think, we can go on and we can keep going and get something more on this. We've got the players, to do something a bit unpredictable, the likes of Cunha and Neto. So the opportunity was always there. I didn't think we would get another one, but I always thought, the chances were there to be created for us to get one. But I think it's just like, it's a good positive trait of our team that we've got at the moment that we're able to do this. I don't think we had this under, like Lopetegui, for example. There's times when once we conceded a couple, we just folded, like the game against the infamous Brighton 6-0, it just capitulated completely and farcical. Whereas this one, even going 2-0 down, 3-1 down, we're still fighting. We just do not give up. We play as if Sunday league cliche, but we still play like it's 0-0, even when we are 3-1 down, which is something which is very, very admirable and very, very admirable and something which I love about this team.
Yeah. Nothing else to say. there's your print that out in manuscript form and print it, put it on the wall, Stamford Bridge. There's your talk done. But then the moment comes. Not that one. We've done that one already. The Neto goal, which is very similar to Sunday, again, cutting in and hitting it low. Delirium, an understatement. And again, like you said, the team doesn't know they're beat. Neither do the fans anymore, which is amazing to see, given the last 18 months.
Crazy the turnaround we've seen, and this sort of resilience and forcing themselves to keep going and keep going and keep going, and like you say, not knowing when they're beat is something that really gets the fans behind the club. And this sort of like underdog story of where we will fight and we'll fight and we'll fight until we literally just collapse onto the pitch, it's everything that we had in sort of the early Nuno days, and especially in sort of that first, second season in the Premier League. It's that wanting to prove everyone wrong and to know that we can prove everyone wrong by just never giving up. Mm. I hate to use memes and things with that, but it's almost like John Cena sort of, but we'll come back to WWE for some reason, but it's always like the John Cena sort of stuff, not never give up, never what. It's crazy. It's insane that the pride that comes back into the fans when you can see the players know that there's always that little chance, even if it's only 1%, they won't give up. And that's what what really warms the heart of everyone inside Molineux at the moment. And if and it gives us something to sing about, it gives us something to cheer for. And we can only say thank you to the management for that.
Yeah.
I think what was quite funny was, as I said before, at this point, Evans had come on as well. And there was still, like, we caught them on the counter, didn't we, from their corner. So that they'd literally, bearing in mind, we just like less than 10 minutes before had made it 3-2. And they're still like proper going for it, trying to get a fourth. Not too much game management going on there. Maybe they didn't want to do game management, but you'd have thought when you throw on Maguire and Evans that you're looking to try and help shore it up. But no. We catch him cold on the break. And like you say, just that goal, just like the Albion goal he scored, pure netto. It's like, obviously this is not a direct comparison, but it's like when Iron Robin used to play, and like you knew what he was, typical left footer on the right. You knew what he was going to do every single time, but for some reason you still can't stop him doing it, even if like you know exactly he's going to check inside. And like I say, Onana had no chance. And it was just, yeah, it was a delirious family enclosure by me at this point. Everyone was, well, the ones that were there, there were some, I did notice some early leavers. And I think some left around 3-1. I've noticed spot some gaps in the North Bank as well. I thought some people just thought, it's a late kickoff with 3-1 down, I'm going to go. But I thought that just then summed up the team. Like for me, like I say, as me and Jafaro said, the nature, the spirit of the team. I just thought, well, this summed us up. You know, the never say die attitude, the fact that we've been on this you know, unbeaten run and scoring run. This it's hard to say it would have been deserved, given the nature of the game. But I sort of like find myself fighting two philosophies here, because, you know, like say we didn't draw the game 3-3, some people say, oh well, we're lucky to get that, or well, take the full-time result, we lost, people will say, oh well, that's what we deserve for the first half. But to me, you say, well, you know, it doesn't matter, because United they didn't take their chances or had their chances chalked off. We've got ourselves to that position there. If it ended 3-3, we deserved to get a 3-3 draw, because the facts show, you know, three goals each. I don't care that United, you know, had more to play and had more chances. Fact is, you know, we would have deserved that draw. So, yeah, returning back to genitalia again, massive kick in the dick when 60 seconds later, I generally had a head in hands moment when that happened. I generally just like, just put my head down and hands, because I couldn't believe that we just chucked it all away.
I just can't. There's no head in hand. I was just, I think I just sighed. It's like, like I was either that or I was worn out from jumping around too much. Probably both. So if you had finished 3-3, I wouldn't have cut my beautiful face open, would I? So it's their fault. Bad Kobe Mainoo. Who was actually
to shave.
Yeah. It's, you can probably get that elsewhere.
It's a good job you didn't do a Manscaped that night then. That's nice.
Oh, I've never done Manscaped in my entire life. They can sponsor us all they want. They can give us all the money. No blades going down there. No, thank you. Andy can be a dolphin and you can send it all to him. Fair enough.
I've got one. Just saying.
Well, there you are. Revelations all round. But I mean, if only Kobe Mainoo would share the post the side. Because I did think he was, I thought he was excellent, actually, to be fair. Although, Dan said, well, I think we underestimated him on the preview show, and that he was like just another one of the young kids coming through, but obviously he's not a class of 92 level. I thought he was really good, actually. And I think maybe if Gomez had played rather than Tommy Doyle, who I didn't think played really, I think he was at fault for anything, really, but maybe that bit more steel there might have done something. But I mean, it's a wonder goal to win the game, isn't it? I mean, I don't think anyone could have done anything around it. He's used the defence as it was in the back. Was it Dawson, who he's curled it round as a shield? And again, similar to Rashford's goal, you you can't defend it, can you?
It's just frustrating because, say, they are avoidable goals. You look at it, it's easy to say with hindsight, but you look back at it, you can say, okay, they could have closed him down quicker, they could have done this better. But you say he had a good game, I don't disagree with that. But you've got to look at it, and we allowed him to build confidence in the game. And by not being on top of him and not being combative with him and putting pressure on him, is because of a young player, we allowed him to build confidence, and then he does what he does in the 97th minute. And that's the frustrating part, is everything that went wrong last night could be preventable.
Mm.
So if you glass half full, you say, okay, that's good, because it's something we can work on. It's something we can fix in training, in through coaching. And yeah, glass half empty is sort of, yeah, okay, we've thrown it away because we've made four self-enforced errors. I mean, looking at glass half full, okay, yeah, okay, we've got time now between now and Chelsea to fix it. But it is very, very frustrating that we've given away. We scored three goals at home and we somehow lost the game. And that's you know, the crux and the be and end all of it. You know, if you're a Molyneux and you put the ball in the net three times and you don't come away with at least a point, something's gone seriously, seriously wrong. Paul, his hands up, he fucked up, I think.
Yeah. And you look for the audio listeners, we just put the graphic from Opta. 16 shots to their 21, 7 on target to their 8. Actually had more possession than them, 53% to their 47. And the XG of 2.14 to their 2.74. So actually, after the car crash of the first half, to have stats that close is an achievement in itself. And I think you kind of summed it up perfectly when you see the pride and all that's back. But again, it counts for nothing. I mean, there's an... this other graph in here that I don't understand, but it's the one that goes up like stairs. Some people love it, some people don't. There you are if you do. But we got ourselves back in, and like you said, it's just one of them days again, isn't it? Which I was trying to think, when was the last time this happened to us? Because nothing was sticking out to me where we've got back into a game and then threw it away at the end.
I can remember, was there a snowy game against Leeds United where they scored late? That's the only one I can think of in my mind. There ain't a lot, is there? And the fact that we're struggling to even think of it is probably, you know, it's a good thing, because it means that these days don't happen very often. And
I was going to say, you look at those, the fact that we're posting those sort of numbers now, and quite on a regular basis, you would have dreamed that of having those stats, those numbers, like under, you know, the end of the Nuno days, or and under Bruno and even Lopetegui. You know, there's no way we'd be having, you know, expected goals of over two a game and having 16 shots on goal. It just wouldn't happen, would it? Would not happen. And again, this is just like a net bit of sort of empty optimism after a home defeat. But, you know, we're playing really good stuff at the moment. There's a reason why we've gone on this, you know, this unbeaten run, and why we're looking at a good team. We're doing, you know, we are playing some really, really exciting stuff. We've got some good creative players in the team. You know, yeah, we're missing that elusive number nine up front, which, you know, we might get onto in the transfer section of the show. But, you know, we're fun to watch again now, I think, anyway. I'm, you know, there's probably more who'll think, you know, along the same lines as me. But remember under those days, we used to go to watch us, and it was a chore to watch us. And you had some pundits who were saying that we were just boring and dull to watch. You know, they're not saying that anymore, because, you know, we know we're putting on a good show on games. But O'Neill's got us to a point where, you know, we're not Kevin Keegan, where we're not seeing this sort of scoreline every other week, where we, you know, it's just goals galore. You know, we generally have been keeping the back door shut as well. It's just that, you know, the latch must have been loose yesterday on the back gate. But I mean, we've given United two really good games this season, haven't we? And we've unfortunately we've took nothing out of either of them. But both games, you know, I don't think United would have expected, you know, how we've ultimately, you know, how the two games have gone ultimately over the course of the season. We've just got to hopefully take similar into the Chelsea game, and you know, make sure that we don't have such a bad or such a slow start as we did, you know, against United yesterday.
Yeah. And on that Chelsea game, we'll just have a little quick break, 7 seconds, you know, the way it goes. And then we're back to Chelsea game, transfer stuff. And there is a tiny little quiz as well, since this is a preview show, and it is a Friday night. What else are you going to be doing? Well, there you are. So we'll be back in a second. So Chelsea then. Then the old King's Road. Getting the wallet blasted away with the price of the points. They weren't all that, was they, on Christmas Eve? I thought it was a very easy, an easy win against Chelsea, which seems a mental thing to say. But first of all, do you feel, despite what happened yesterday, do you fear Chelsea on Sunday?
No, I don't. I think I struggle to think what Chelsea are at the moment. You know, they're you know, we were just talking about United not being what they used to be, you know, in the grand scheme of things. But you know, Chelsea, I've never known, and it probably never has been known in the history of football, a club to spend so much money and just get progressively worse season after season. That if they wanted to, they could put two midfielders in that cost 200 million, like in Casado and Enzo Fernandez. And you think, just why? Yeah, how and what? You know, have you spent so much on this? And again, they spent all this money, and they don't even have a proper striker, do they? They bought Nkunku, who's been permanently injured. Jackson is just, you know, Ali Dia like. And then that's one for the older listeners and watchers. Google him rather. And then this Brozier, the other one, the only other striker they've got, they've let go. So they're just a baffling team or baffling club, Chelsea. They just spend so much and just get worse. And I don't think they're entertaining to watch, really. They've probably got one player who is entertaining to watch is Cole Palmer. He, you know, he's, when you see him on the ball, he's you know, he's quite good, quite an intelligent footballer. But mind you, that I don't want to be mirroring what we've said against United. We're all confident going into the United game, saying they're there for the take, and they're going to be beaten. It'll be a different challenge, put it that way, on Sunday. But you know, if we can play how good we can, we should be one of these clubs who are taking advantage of just Chelsea's pure state of flux at the moment.
Yeah, I mean that's my thoughts as well. I mean, you look at them and you. They've all are Chelsea are back, and you look at the teams who are their back against, and their recent wins there: Fulham, Luton, Palace. It's and then their two losses in that group of five is Liverpool last week, where they were battered. Well, this week where they were battered 4-1, and the one before that was the aforementioned 2-1. So. It doesn't make any sense at all. I don't know. It's not even like they've been Football Manager shopping, because none of them seem any good. And you think, well, at least one of them would come off. But they're almost like all regens who no one's heard of. And yet they all cost like £40 million. It's just bizarre. But yeah,
I mean, like Marlo Gusto and Diaz, I've never just. like you say, they are literally Football Manager regens, and some of them, they're just generally, whenever you sign for Chelsea, there's a over 50% chance that within a year you'll be out on loan somewhere. Generally, like I say, it's happened to Brozier, that Matson that they've had, he's on loan at Dortmund now. And then one of the good players they do have, from Conor Gallagher, the accountants are taking charge and wanting to sell him. So they've got to sell him for the books. I don't know, it's just ridiculous. It's just an absolute car crash since the new ownership come in. It's just an absolute shambles, which, to be fair, is good for us.
Yeah. I mean, we have got comments from PTM54 there. I think we'll bugger it up against them too, which, again, it wouldn't surprise you, would it? He really wouldn't, because it's classic Wolves to do that kind of thing, but this is not classic Wolves anymore, as we saw last Sunday. So, I mean, you mentioned him there, pricing. We might as well talk about him from still with the... You think we dodged a bullet with the Brozier? You think Brozier? No one even knows what his name is. No one says it right. Who knows? But that fee is mental, isn't it? I mean, it's basically you play him or you give us £4 million for however many games left of the season. Do we need it?
It's a silly risk, really. For us to we would need to have been in sort of a relegation battle, or we would have, you know, there would have a distinct need to spend the money. There's not really, but we're kind of comfortable where we are in the league. We're not going to get relegated. You know, we're not sort of guaranteed European football. I mean, we could get there if the results and things start going the right way again. But there's no desperation in what we want to do in the transfer window. So there was no point just throwing money at it. You know, Brozier's a good player. There's no doubt he is a good footballer. He probably would have made a difference if he was here. But as a football club, we don't stoop and bend ourselves to stupid demands like playing time. Because I think it was Jeff Shee said it when he came in, that we don't pay to develop other teams' players. Why should we? Why should we be paying stupid money out to develop Brozier if we couldn't afford to buy him for £35 million in the summer? It makes no economic sense. It makes no sense for the players that are here. It makes no sense for Nathan Frazier. You know, it's for the club to throw money at it, like I say, would have been a need of desperation, and we don't have that. The club doesn't stink of desperation like it did like this time last year. There's no need. So to dodge a bullet, yes, because it would have been wasted money that you know, we can use in the summer.
Yeah, we don't need to go into my thoughts on the available funds, but it's just baffling to me how we've seemed to only realise that I think there's two footballers in the world who we can buy, and both of them happen to be available this week. There's obviously more than Brozier, whatever. And the other one, whose agent has bent him over twice in a move to England, it's just baffling. I mean, I've got no qualms about Nathan Frazier being used. It'd be good for him. We've seen what he's got already. He's better than Fabio Silva. Don't care. He is. And I think it was telling again from Gary O'Neill yesterday, wasn't it? Where he's basically kind of said, well, if Fabio and Sasha were here, they wouldn't play anyway. Even if there was a crisis. So what's the point in them being here? It doesn't make any sense. He clearly doesn't fancy them. It's no one's fault. It's obviously no one's fault. They're not good enough for his eyes or his style of play. They move on. And again, they need game time. Unfortunately, what happened with Sasha, but Fabio Silva, he's not exactly enduring himself to the Scottish friends, is he? So we'll see. We'll see what happens with him. But for me, it's just bizarre how the two, obviously, you'd like to think that they were linked with more players, but there's only been two that were leaked. But why this happens every year, without fail, every single year. I put the thing out on Twitter earlier about the quote from Bruno Lage, which is eerily similar. How he was looked like we were going to get someone in, and then at the last minute, the goalpost changed and the Johnny Phillips thing today, and it all seems a load of bollocks, which we'll see. We'll see when the accounts come out. We'll see who was telling the truth or not. It just seems very bizarre that all these players, we've got them off the wage bill, getting them out the door, and now when it comes to the crunch, we've got no money again. Nah, I ain't buying it.
It's like a previously spun record, isn't it? This one from, and it, I guess it frustrates us because we know, the coaching staff know, that even just getting in that number nine would really help us push forward. You know, we can stop asking Cunha to do something which he doesn't naturally want to do. You know, he's doing it well. You know, he's having a great season for us. But you know, we all know that, you know, he wants to play like a slightly different role from what we've currently playing at the moment. I'd just say as a wider picture, though, we have listened to like a lot of podcasts and throughout the course of January that, you know, this FFP thing is spooking quite a lot of clubs, isn't it? You know, there's not been much movement in the Premier League as a whole throughout January. So we could maybe set it against that, the fact that, you know, no one's doing any business, even like the big teams like Newcastle with the richest owners have to sort of play within the rules to a point. So I guess when you question Jeff or the accountants about it, they point to that and say, look, you know, no one else is doing anything. We're all in the same boat here, pretty much. It kind of makes a mockery of like having the whole January window. If no one's going to do anything, it's just pointless, isn't it? If no one's going to do anything at all, how is Sky going to fill their 12-hour transfer show or whatever? And there's absolutely fuck all to talk about. But we'll see where we are. Like you say, we'll see where we are when the Fosun approved accounts come out with Jeff's rubber stamp of approval. And then obviously all eyes will be on the summer, but I say it's just a shame now, as we get to this point in the season, you can kind of see where you might need an emergency player to come in. I don't think we're asking much, were we, to get like, you know, the sort of the player that we're after. And like you say, it only really transpires like the eve of the transfer window, like, oh, this player out of nowhere just goes, oh, we're looking at this player. Like throughout the previous 29 days of January, whatever, Yuri Alberto had never been mentioned once. You know, I didn't even know who he was until he just suddenly popped up, like transfer deadline day eve. You're like, oh, right, this guy. And it all goes tits up. But, you know, we've got to thank ourselves. We could have got Kiefer Moore in.
Yeah, I mean, and that's...
Oh. Talking about getting excited, I mean, this video would be fucking X-rated if we'd signed Kiefer Moore yesterday. Tell you now,
this would be your screen would be like the Cartman meme from South Park if we'd have got Kiefer Moore in. Just would have been DNA everywhere.
But yeah, no, I think Gully put it well on Twitter. He put it on Twitter and he says, "Would you rather clubs spend wisely?" And that's what PSR has essentially done. Is it's actually forced people to follow the rules, because FFP was a fucking joke because UEFA were running it and UEFA the most bent thing going in the world. But now it's all been bought into house with PSR. We've actually got clubs who are wanting to actually focus and actually behave themselves, unlike others. I'm not going to say anyone, Nottingham Forest. Absolute joke club when it comes to transfers. Just it's good to see that, you know, the focus is on wanting to actually make clubs self-sustainable. I do feel that there's still going to be money available in the summer, because there will be, because Neto will probably leave, and there is going to be money made available. And but the thing is, we don't need to rush. We've got Huang coming back. We've got players that are coming through. If we've done it and we've got this far and no one else has improved their squads, do we really need to throw money at somebody who could come in and potentially upset the dressing room? Because it only takes one. It takes one bad apple and it rots the whole squad. And that's always the danger with any transfer.
The Asprilla effect. for that. Again, one for the kids. I mean, Bournemouth have done it, haven't they? I mean, Bournemouth are annoying me because, I mean, they've signed another one with an obligation. I think it's $35 million in the summer for Bournemouth to be spending that much money. But my point on it was, if, say, we've freed up 80, 90, for rounding it up, say, 100 grand a week on players out the door whose wages are being covered by other teams, mainly Fabio in Scotland, amazingly. We couldn't get anyone on loan and pay all of their, not Danny Ings or anyone like that. We could get someone on loan, again, from Brazil with an option or something like that, and defer it like we have, like the Tommy Doyle thing. You're saying that that's not possible for us where we are, that we wouldn't have been spending any money that we didn't have anyway. And like the whole Neves thing where his pay was, he was on a low wage until we got promoted and then it was back paid again within the rules. These are the same people here now that were there then. You're telling me that, oh, we can't do that anymore. Of course we can. It's not even bent. It's not even like you were saying, manipulating the books and stuff like that. There's ways and means around it. They just choose not to do it. So that's up to them. But again, we go where we got. And good old Hwang saving Korea's bacon again. I mean, that penalty, balls of steel. I think Danny called it.
That was a thriker, that was.
If he's away for another two, if we still struggle through for another 2 weeks without him, then when who'd have thought we'd be saying this a year ago? Especially on here.
I think obviously we're fine as we are, and we're coping, but then you go back to the old cliche of what happens when one of their forward line gets a bad tackle and is out for X amount of weeks, or Cunha, and this isn't the realm's possibility, but Cunha has a bit of a red mist episode, and or you know, something winds up the wrong way and he sees red, and we're without him for three games. That could potentially, you know, instigate a whole formation change, or, you know, a whole different change in philosophy setup, you know, while he's out. It's just, like you say, this record's been played before by Jeff, hasn't it? You know, we seem to get to this position where, you know, we have momentum behind us. We have, good things are going for us. And then the brakes are pumped, aren't they? Or, well, the handbrake is applied, isn't it? You know, so when it comes to finances. And I'm not going to profess to know, you know, the ins and outs of what we can and can't spend. Stu, that's more your bag to know. That's, you know, that sort of stuff. You've done your homework on this sort of stuff. But, you know, we have been here before. And obviously we did have January 12 months ago when we went on the trolley dash to save our bacon, essentially, as was Julen's requirements. But, you know, I think we'll certainly see, you know, when the accounts will be very interesting. And, you know, I think as previously has been said, that it'll be our time to shine come this coming summer, when we can, you know, be a bit more looser with the purse strings, or so they say. But, you know, I just hope that they can, well, yeah, Pete here in the comments there says it'd be amazing if he gets even 20 million, but you could probably see him being allowed one player or something this summer, Jeff being uber stingy, and we're allowed just to get a number nine and that's it. But you'd like to think that, you know, we're not just happy to do almost like a Mike Ashley-esque thing where we're just happy to exist in the league. We do want that bit of excitement to, you know, we're looking on the European places on the horizon. We were talking about it in recent weeks. We want to maintain that momentum where possible and not have the brakes applied.
Yeah. And I mean, going back to the league table, I mean, taking yesterday away, we're still 11th. We are only, what, six points off 7th, despite what happened yesterday. It's not, and obviously winning the FA Cup, which is the best way. But if we win the FA Cup, yeah. I mean, you look at the other games at the weekend, and we'll come to that in a second. But when we win the FA Cup, we might have to go on Twitch. We might have to go nipple blurring because the excitement will be all-time high. I mean, I don't think I'll be able to speak. It took me two. I mean, I know there was people asking where I was. I was never supposed to be on. I was not banned. I was not pissed. I was just not here. But that was through the rotor. There was nothing else. But I couldn't have spoken anyway because my voice from the album match didn't come back until Tuesday. If we ever win anything, dear.
Are we gonna mention the Brighton pricing? That seems to have.
Yes, that was
part of the controversy.
I didn't realise that it was £30 in the Steve Ball and the Billy Wright to watch Brighton on a more than likely a Wednesday night in the FA Cup fifth round. It's a bit ridiculous, isn't it? Really. But saying that, if it had been the other way around and Brighton had charged us £30 to go down there, same as it is in the Premier League, we'd have all gone. Well, us usual ones would have gone because it's what we pay every. Yeah, it's what we pay every. We pay £30 anyway. It's just that we've kind of been, accustomed to paying less in the cup, which in the early rounds against terrible teams, then you can understand it, but. Is there going to be 24,000 there? Because I don't think there will be. Because people will just be pissed off again.
I think it's a bit naughty than to do it, but I think when you get to the slightly later stages, later stages we are, they're kind of trying to take advantage of the cup fever, so to speak. More people get interested because we're in the later stages and there's a potential quarter final at stake. So they're like, oh no, let's chuck another fiver on the cost of a ticket. I mean, I've got an early flight to Fuerteventura the next morning, so it's making me think, do I want to spend £40 for me and the boy to go? And I've got to be like up about 5 hours later, as soon as the game ends, to fly out. And apparently it's on iPlayer. So that might help make people's minds up if they want to watch it. But I think there'll still be a healthy crowd, but it's just, I think they've missed a trick there to like really like pack the, you know, have no doubts about packing the place out. If they kept it like £25, let's say £25 ceiling, what would have been the harm in that? Why push your boat out further to £30?
Yeah, £25 behind the goal, but yeah,
yeah.
Point stands. I mean, if you can charge £20 in the corner with no roof, and Albion charged £20 in every stand last week. It does seem a bit of. I mean, both clubs have to agree as well, remember, because it is the FA Cup. So it could be Brighton pissing about and saying, no, we're worth more than that. You just don't know.
Imagine Brighton saying that. We're worth it.
Yeah. Well, it could be Gully. Gully's wishes getting down there. Giving them a heightened sense of being that they deserve. But yeah, I think like you, it's a bit of a missed trick, and it could come back to bite them in the arse. Especially, well, again, I'm going to have to put a tweet out and rally the troops again, unlike last time. Because if I entered, they still haven't given me any money back for that. That was down to me alone, getting them, getting 4,000 extra people on the day. But yeah, this one is on the iPlayer, so that's not going to happen again, is it? So. But I think we've brought the mood down now. Are you slagging them off about the ticket prices and Chelsea? To lighten the mood before we leave. Yeah, we leave you all. Because it is a preview show, there amazingly is one of the little Sudden Death Squads game from September 2003. Wolves-Chelsea. I'm glad when Dan sent me this that I didn't have to play because I would have lost again. How old were you in September 2003, Jaffo?
13.
Oh, sorry. Oh, let's see. This is prime era, prime time. Brycey?
God, 2003. Would I have been 20? Just turned 40, so...
Yeah.
19, I think 19.
Yeah. So Well, we'll let youth go first. You know the rules. September 2003, Wolves 0, Chelsea 5. How many goal scorers? 1, 2, 4 goal scorers. Jaffa, up first.
So, what, just one of the squad members, yeah?
Yeah, for either team if you want.
Okay, Michael Oakes.
Correct.
I will go for... Are we allowed subs as well?
I mean, yeah. I've been sent no rules, so we'll go with that. Yeah.
Well, I'm only saying this guy because I think he scored his first touch in English football, and that was Hernan Crespo.
Correct.
Dennis Irwin.
Correct.
Okay, let's go with Craddock. He would have started, wouldn't he?
Jody Craddock is there.
Henry Kamara.
Henry Kamara is there, yes.
To switch it up to Chelsea, I say Joe Cole.
Joe Cole is on the bench. So I don't know if he came on. The information is not there, but yes. You're sliding just about. Oh, that's huge effect.
Paul Makalele.
Of course. What was that role named? What was that role be called before it was named after him?
Oh God, on the spot now. It's not Regista. That's the 8. But you bear with me. Just carry on and off. I'll think.
It's 2003. For Wolves, we would have had. I guess Lee Naylor would have been left back, wouldn't he?
Yes, he was.
Yeah.
Stefan Iversen.
Stefan Iversen is correct. Oh, I looked at Chelsea's squad then first.
We would have had, I guess at that point, I was early on, so we probably would have had Cameron in the middle.
He was on the bench, so yet again, sneaking past. I know this is against all of the normal rules, but this is carrying on. How about to you?
Glenn Johnson.
Glenn Johnson is correct.
Good pick. Well, in that case, Alex Ray must have been playing then as well.
Alex Ray was on the bench as well.
Oh, my God.
There's going to be no bench left soon. So.
I'm naming more bench warmers than starters.
I got Carlo Cudicini.
Yes, Carlo Cudicini is there.
Okay, so we've only named one Wolves centre half. So, God, this could be difficult. Did Butler play? Who else would have? Go on. I'll just go with Butler.
Of course.
Yeah.
Professional mank himself, Paul Butler.
Mark Kennedy?
Mark Kennedy is correct.
So, Chelsea, Damien Duff.
Damien Duff. Yes, he's there.
Idagard Johnson.
Idagard Johnson. Yes, he's there.
Well, John Terry.
Of course. Mr. England. Did you see him in the away end at Anfield the other day?
No.
What a bell end. Yeah, he was there looking old John Terry. He's only got one expression, hasn't he? And he was there with the boys. If he got inspiration from Shearer, I don't know, but he was there. That's his fellow.
John Terry.
Yes, but Grinkia. Oh, Grinkia, sorry.
Grinkia is there, yes.
Great show. Oh. This could be another potential bench warmer, but I'm going to go Jimmy Floyd Hasselbaink.
He did actually start.
Oh.
and score. So,
of course he did.
Yeah.
I don't know whether he was at Chelsea at the time, but Gallas.
Yes, he was there and played.
There you go.
I can't remember what time he signed for Chelsea, but Lampard.
Yeah, Lampard played.
Yeah.
The other Icelandic, I'll go with our Icelandic love, Gudjonsson.
Ida Gudjonsson. We've mentioned Gudjonsson.
No, our Gudjonsson.
No, there is only one Gudjonsson here, which I presume is Ida.
Yep, there you go. Obviously wins.
No, he's got to get this one.
He's got to get this one.
Got to name one more. Christ, who have we not?
One to win.
Who have we not named? No, I was going to say a defender, but Mourinho signed him. Oh, God, who the bloody hell have we got left to name?
There's, looking at this, there's probably six, maybe eight, are both left.
How many, starters are left?
Bear with me.
Have we named, pretty much the starting 11s?
There's two for Wolves, and there's one for Chelsea.
Well, for the Wolves one, I don't know if I can't remember him doing much, but I'm going to say Sean Newton.
Sean Newton did play. Price wins the game.
Yeah. I never win these, so I'm all good.
I mean, it's made me tired. Just read it out.
Yeah, sorry.
That's a name, though. Your name's something I would never have thought of.
Yeah, so the Wolves lineup that day that lost 5-0 to Chelsea, September 2003. Oakes, Irwin, Butler, Craddock, Naylor, Newton, Paul Ince, Gudjonsson, Kennedy, Everson, and Rukamara.
What a lineup.
I mean, I did say Gudjonsson.
You didn't mention his first name, though, did you?
What, Johannes Cole?
What?
Johannes Cole, that's his real name.
No one knows that.
That's weird.
For Chelsea, Cudicini, Johnson, Terry, Gallas, Football Manager legend, left back.
Fabiaro.
Yes. Gronkio, Makalele, Lampard, Duff, Hasselbank, Gudjonsson. Subs for Wolves, Matt Murray, Oleg Luzhny, Cameron Ray, Silas.
Oh, yeah, Joey Gudjonsson's called it, wasn't it?
Joey Gudjonsson, yes. Subs, Ambrosio, David Custard, Cole, Petit, Crespo, and Huth. Which I'd never have got Robert Huth there in that team.
Gotcha.
There we are.
Those were the glory days, weren't they?
Truly.
I think the week before, we were 4-0 down to Charlton at half time.
And then 5-1 the week before that.
Everton masterclass.
What a season. But the season goes on, boys and girls. Before we leave after this 1 hour and 26 minute episode of the Wolves Fancast.
45 minutes, you said.
It should be 45 minutes. It's not going to be because it's us.
It never is with us three.
No. There you are. There's your Friday night lights. scores on the doors. Since you won, Pricey, you go first. Chelsea Wolves.
I see this being a low scoring affair. And I think it will be 1-0 to the Wanderers. 1-0 away win.
Excellent. Chifo?
1-1.
Would people be mad with a 1-1 after losing yesterday? You can't be, surely.
I wouldn't be disappointed.
There'd probably be some people who are keen to get back on the wagon, wouldn't they, after that?
Yeah. Our away form ain't great.
Yeah. I don't know. I've got a wee... I've got a weird feeling that we're going to do something like ridiculous there, like 3-0 or something like that. But again, I'm not on for a couple of weeks, so no nipples. Yeah, why not?
It's worth expensive pie, isn't it?
Oh,
it's worth expensive pie.
You know what? Last time we went there, it was only like $4.25, and apparently there was pie controversy in the chat that someone saying it was $5.75. Not in the Steve Bullitt wasn't, because they'd taped over the old prices with £6. And I should have got a picture. I should have put it in the thing, but there we are. What? Next time we're there, I'll get evidence and I'll put it on Twitter for everyone to see. Yeah, I'll go 3-0. Fuck it, why not? 3-0.
You bad man.
Go on.
Bad man. Yeah. I'm not too...
Calm down.
I can't wear one of them hats.
But I'd pay money to see you do it.
I don't know. What are they called? I don't know what they are. They're like tight bandanas.
Oh, well, the same thing that gangster Roy Hodgson had in that picture.
Yeah. In the AI gangster Roy Hodgson picture.
Roy the boy rides again, in it.
we're verging onto cultural appropriation now. We're going to get banned again. So just shut up while we're ahead. I'm going 3-0. It's 10 o'clock on a Friday night. You've got better things to be doing with your lives. See you later.
Bye-bye.